Yes.
Sure. Richard Lewis.
Scott Hubbard.
I'm, what's that?
You're the expert?
I'm the expert.
He's the scientist. I'm the writer-producer.
Yeah.
I know nothing. No.
The former Mars czar for NASA.
I think he's written up in your little booklet.
Scott Hubbard. Yes.
So what tales can we weave for you, folks?
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you get involved? I mean, make a career of it now, like consulting on sci-fi films, or is this the first time, or how's that work?
No, this is the first time I've ever been involved in a movie. Okay. Obviously, I've been in aerospace for 40 years, was with NASA for 20, now I'm at Stanford, and I've been involved in a lot of missions and launching things to Mars and so forth. But this was unique, and it came about through a variety of interesting connections, one of which was that, believe it or not, the National Academy of Sciences has something called the Science and Entertainment Exchange. So they will provide an expert to a producer or a company that wants it to say, you know, is the script accurate or not accurate and so forth. And so I met Richard as a result of a call from these folks down in Hollywood here. And he was with writer Alan Loeb, and the call that I got said, these guys are making a movie about the first child born on Mars, and they have a whole bunch of questions. Would you be willing to meet with them? And I said, yeah, sure. And it started there. And
well, it actually predates it, which is quite ironic. So Stuart Schill's a writer I was working with on another movie, and a space movie, and he came into my office one day and said, have an idea for a story. What do you think would happen if an astronaut discovered she was pregnant on the first flight to Mars? Well, okay, that's an interesting idea. And my dad was a heart specialist. He connected me with scientists at NASA Ames, only to find out years later that he ran NASA Ames. It's a small world. So I asked the question, and there were two gentlemen on the line, and they got very quiet. And the moments later, they said, have you been listening to our phone calls? And I said, I've never...
Spying on NASA's
I said, I've
calls.
Never met you in my life. And I said, why? And they said, because we don't know what's going to happen. And it probably will happen, and we're not prepared. We don't know how to give birth, to help a woman give birth. We don't know how to abort. We don't know how to turn the ship around. We can't turn the ship around. And here are the things that could happen. My dad was a heart specialist, and he talked about the pressure of first being born in space and then coming to Earth with its two-thirds greater gravity and the pressure on the heart, pressure on the bones. So we wove that into the script. We had our science in pretty good shape by the time we met Scott, but he was able to vet every single thing along the way. We worked with NASA. We worked with SpaceX. So what's very important to me as a filmmaker, surrounded by doctors in my family, I'm the black sheep, is that the science was real, verifiable. There's still a great story to be told on top of it, so we're not doing documentary, but that it would work. And Scott, every step of the way, all the way through the science and the medicine of it, brought on flight surgeons to verify what we're doing, and it actually came all the way to the ending. As we were deciding on what the ship would be that would rescue Gardner at the end, he said, you know, there's this group. You tell the story, actually.
Yeah, there is a group that's called Sierra Nevada Corporation.
Not the beer.
No. And run by a really wonderful gentleman named Mark Sarangelo. And they've been, for years, developing this thing that looks like a miniature shuttle. It's called the Dream Chaser. And it came out of early research that NASA did. And I said to Richard, you know, there, since at the end of the movie you're trying to create an environment where you can save Gardner by having a reduced gravity, and you want to show that, let me hook you up with Mark Sarangelo, and I'll show you the Dream Chaser. And it worked out. One thing led to another, and they were able to incorporate that fantastic image at the end by actually going and filming a model.
So that was a real ship that we pulled out of their lab and put it on the tarmac in New Mexico, and as we finished filming, they got a contract for multi-billion dollars from NASA to do exactly that, a rescue ship.
Art imitates life, imitates art.
So it was really cool that it all dovetailed. We spent time with Elon Musk, we looked at their suits, we took Gary Oldman to SpaceX, and that environment, that kind of disruptive mindset that Elon has and Richard Branson have and Jeff Bezos is really woven into the characters. I went to one of the shuttle launches, one of the last ones. I went to the Columbia.
The one right after first return to flight after the Columbia tragedy.
Right, and I met with female astronauts.
Commander, Eileen Collins, was the commander of that and very first female commander.
Right, and talked to her and other people about what is it like to be a woman and an astronaut. And a lot of them put part of their life on hold in their dedication to the science. Some of them were married. I didn't meet one that had children. And that's, you know, bittersweet part of it. And that's part of Carla Cugino's character. That's where that comes from. So we tried to really steep this story in the science and the hard science of it, and yet tell an adventure, because it really is. And it's, you know, when we started, what's about to happen, it was still a pipe dream.
Yeah.
And as you can see, it's, you know, I want to get the damn film out before actually people do get land on it. because it's happening. You know, Elon's saying he's coming in such state. Now Lockheed said, okay, well, we can beat you. There is a new resurgence and an ambition to go to space. And it's, my perception is post 9/11 was a very dark period. A lot of fear, a lot of movies reflecting that fear and post-traumatic stress and the violence. And now there's a shift, at least part of the movie-going audience is a shift with The Martian, with Hidden Figures, with Arrival, mm-hmm. is to the great beyond, that we're messing up our planet so greatly that we better find another place to inhabit, which is depressing, but maybe
hopeful too.
Hopeful at the same time. So anyway, so all that, and then one other bit of science that's interesting is the communication. In the real world, to communicate to Mars takes, 8 to 10 minutes because of the speed of light. And so we said, okay, that would be a really long movie. how do we solve that? And Scott came up with a great idea that's in the movie. It says Quantum Con. He can explain.
Yeah, if you notice it, it's in the corner of the screen where Tulsa and Gardner are interacting with each other. And the name I came with on the spur of the moment, the concept has been around for a long time. In quantum mechanics, there's something called entanglement, and they've done these experiments up to a separation of 100 plus miles, and what the experiments show is that under certain circumstances, either a signal is traveling faster than the speed of light, or there's some other dimension that allows these two particles to communicate with each other. So I just extrapolated from that, and I said, well, what if, you know, in the future, this effect is used to create a communication link between the two of them. And I said, call it Quantum Comp, you know. and that was put into the movie.
So you can be at two places at the same time, right?
Yeah, so it would be like this. Say this is Gardner and this is Tulsa in the regular universe. And, you know, it takes 10 minutes for it to go here and 10 minutes for the signal to come back. But this real effect in physics says they're under certain conditions, it would be as if they were right next to each other in a higher dimensionality. You know, physics today says you need 7 dimensions, not just 4, to explain everything.
Chris Nolan in his last movie.
Yes, yeah.
So again, it's important all the way along that, yes, there's a great story, a relationship story between a young boy and a girl, between a boy and a scientist, between a boy and an astronaut. But there's also the science underpinning, so that was important that it have validity to us as filmmakers.
The science is so integral to the plot of the movie, so how much did those initial conversations change the course of the story, or did it?
Well, the initial conversation with NASA Ames set us on the course, which was, okay, it could happen. An astronaut could get pregnant. In the old days, apparently, you know, it was quarantine. When I grew up watching it, there were all these trucks and quarantine and big outfits. Now, it's a place called The Cottage on the beach. They can have conjugal visits and all that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're still separated at the very end because you don't want to have somebody that's got the flu to infect the astronaut. But I consulted when we got going with what are called flight surgeons. I mean, these are the doctors that keep the astronauts healthy. And I said, is it conceivable that this could happen? And the guy said, well, we take every possible precaution that we don't have an inadvertent pregnancy by a female astronaut, but he said it's not zero. He said it could happen. So
right, so the science, we started from a scientific basis, and then extrapolated, talked to heart surgeons all the way through. And so, it really drove the center of the story. Mm-hmm. But when we started, Asa Butterfield was 14 when I met him off of Hugo. And then he became 15, 16, 17, 18. He's playing a 16-year-old. He's 6'1". And so the story evolved, the sophistication of the relationship and the love story from a boy-girl friendship story became more evocative. And that was a natural progression. It's not, it's science, but it's not, you know, it's just, you know, real life. So, you know, again, all the way through to the Dream Chaser, which was a spur of the moment on location. Okay, we could design a ship, CGI, or we could have the real thing. Mm-hmm. So we boxed up. They were in Denver. We were in Albuquerque. Sent our design team down. They looked at it, sent us photos. It's great. Put it on a truck. Drove it to location. We parked it on the tarmac at the Air Force Base and shot it. And then the rest is computer generated. And I know when Mark Sarangelo, the head of CIA, about saw the movie, burst into tears because he's never seen it fly for real. Mm-hmm. And we made it fly for real. So it is then life imitating art, because we've proven that it could work. So science is a huge part of it, and obviously the characters are all, the evolution of the characters, they're all broken in some way. They all have issues, you know, from Asa to Britt to Carla to Gary to those characters, and they, it doesn't all work out in the end, but it, enough of it gives you hope, and that's important to me, so...
I'm going to have to take these guys from...
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you. Bye.